You are listening to the Alouettes Flight Deck, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
All right, folks, we've been cleared for takeoff.
Give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now and give me a hell, give me a yell. Stand up right now, get ready to go. She ain't moving slow, she's taking control. Pushing the pedal through the floor. I'm begging for more, you better hold on.
And welcome to Alouettes Flight Deck, podcast dedicated to Montreal Alouettes football, sponsored by Bad Monkey Popcorn. I'm Tim Capper, along with Cliffy D. What's up, sir?
Oh, just same old, same old. I'm just enjoying a very relaxed, quiet bye week.
Yeah, it's very weird to come on to a show, and there are some things that we can talk about, but not very much related to the Owls in any way, shape, or form. You know, no breaking news of any sorts or anything like that. You know, as much as the circus of the circus that the CFL can be sometimes. So it's yeah. But it was interesting. It'll be an interesting week. We've got a lot to talk about. There were a few things. Yeah, it's funny. I've said this many times with other podcasts I've done before, where you just finish a show and then all of a sudden something pops up and you're like, damn, man, why did we tape when we did? So,
well, our buddies over at Podski Wee can definitely relate to that, because it seems like every time that they record a podcast, the day after, some major breaking news for the Hamilton Tiger Cats happens, and it's just almost like completely missed the boat, or their podcast just becomes obsolete at that point because what they were talking about just became completely undid by this late breaking news. So I feel for those guys. It's never easy. You always want to be ahead of the game. You want to be ahead of the curve on a lot of things, but sometimes life just throws you a curveball.
It's not like talk radio. Unfortunately, once you push publish and that thing goes live out of the interwebs, yeah, the show is out there, so it's unfortunately no mulligans. And then when you're talking about it a week later, which has happened to us before, when you talk about it a week later, it's just that, a week later. But you know, it's I guess it's still somewhat relevant. So usually. So okay, we have only 2 weeks left in our Bad Monkey Popcorn taste test, and we can already tell you what flavors we have left. We have chocolate and we got bad girl, and the wheel looks very bare. This virtual wheel of ours looks very bare. Do not forget, by the way, Bad Monkey Popcorn can be bought in most major and independent stores here in Quebec and across Canada at the Bed Bath & Beyond locations. If you're looking for any specific location of where you are located, head over to badmonkeypopcorn.com.
And once again, don't forget, Alouettes fans, if you are going to any football games this year in 2017, there is a Bad Monkey kiosk at the stadium in the north section. By all means, swing on by, get to meet the folks that are there. Absolutely great people. And make sure you try these flavors, because we've been trying these flavors for you now for several weeks. And I'm going to be almost a little bit sad to see the taste test end. But I can tell you right now, we've tried some absolutely incredible flavors, and it's been an adventure. So if you're going to the game, especially the game this Friday against the Toronto Argonauts, swing by, grab yourself a bag of Bad Monkey Popcorn and see what we've been talking about these past few weeks. This is really outstanding popcorn, folks.
One thing I actually found out is that I'd have to go back and check. If you go to their Facebook or Instagram account, Cliff, they're actually they're discounting their new protein popcorn. I don't know what to think. Protein, but it's usually $3.50 a bag. It's a reduction. I think it's a buck off. But you have to go to their head office over in Saint Laurent, Quebec. But again, if you are interested in that, head over to their Facebook page or to their Instagram page and find out more information. You know, it's like, what is it? Popcorn with Red Bull. Mind you, that's not protein. That's popcorn that gives you wings. All right, so we got two flavors left, as I mentioned. The wheel looks bare. Let's spin it. Let's see how we're gonna get our popcorn on. Hold on.
Let's do this.
Bad girl.
All right. I've been curious to try this flavor, so
it's one of my faves.
I'm very excited.
I gotta grab my
And of course, by process of elimination, that also means that next week we will be trying the chocolate and sea salt flavor popcorn.
That's right. Keep forgetting you can just tear it with your fingers, with your hands, can't you? No scissors necessary.
Cool.
So, Cliff, what is the flavor?
All right. Well, Bad Girl is a combination of both nacho cheese and caramel flavor. I'm not sure what makes that a bad girl, but it'll be interesting. Let's have a little taste.
Can't get my bag open.
Wow. So that's interesting.
It is an interesting taste.
I'm guessing they were trying to go for the sort of salty sweet or that savory sweet kind of flavor to it. And yeah, that's
one thing I do notice. And for some reason, with this one, it always happens when I'm eating it. I get some of the barbecue, the nacho cheese, and it starts to make me cough. It has nothing to do with it's me. It's not the popcorn. It's me.
Hmm. I will say, like, last couple weeks we tried the the Quebecois, which has the maple syrup flavor, which was a little bit light, just as I stated, a bit of a whisper of that maple syrup taste.
It's
and then
perfect.
We also tried the
yeah, it's perfect.
And then we tried the creme brulee caramel, which had a real sweet taste to it, which was nice as well. Like this, the sweet that I'm getting from this is, I'd say, somewhere in the middle of the Quebecois and the creme brulee caramel.
But you also have that hint of the nacho cheese.
Mm-hmm.
You just get is it fair to say an aftertaste of it? Because it's not just caramel. You get a hint of it.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to see here.
Yeah, because I think in most instances, I don't think most people would want to say take Doritos and dip them in caramel and think that's something that you'd want to eat.
Well, considering all the weird types of different flavors that they have out there these days.
Well, can't argue that. But this, I got to say, it's I'm pleasantly surprised at how well this tastes.
And once again, it has my favorite ingredient, TBHQ. Mm-mm.
I don't know how I lived without TBHQ before this.
I know.
This experiment started. Another week or two, I'll be mainlining this stuff.
So, how many footballs are you going to give this?
I'll go 4 footballs on this. Like, this is just a very original, eclectic kind of flavor, and I got to say, I'm very pleasantly surprised at just the overall taste of it, because like I said, most people would normally kind of turn up their nose a little bit at both nacho cheese and caramel together, but it somehow it works. I don't know what these mad geniuses are up to when they come up and combine these flavors, but it works and it's really, really interesting.
I would like to try one of their flavors that you if you could get a specialty flavor, you know, if they came out with the sriracha. You know, rather than just the generic, I can't say generic, rather than just their core flavors that they have, try like a sriracha.
I'd be down for a sriracha flavor. Or any sort of like something kind of spicy like a jalapeno or habanero or something of that nature. I think that would.
Yeah. Jalapeno and cheese. Jalapeno nacho cheese. I know that's been done, but they're like, can't just, you know, it's finger licking. Can't just eat one. Gotta stop. Need something to drink. For me, I'll give three and a half footballs. Okay. It's one of my favorites that I've had before. Good stuff. Can't complain.
No, like I said, it's a little weird, the thought process behind it, but I gotta say the bad girl, I'm very happy. I'm not mad at this at all. I think it's really a really neat snack. I think sitting down watching a football game, just like some of the other flavors, I think you'd be more than happy just to sit and watch the Alouettes play while munching down on a bag of this stuff. I think it'd be really, really good.
Yeah, I agree. All right. So, you know, joking aside before we were talking about how, you know, we have the show and then something pops up. Well, that's kind of what happened with us. You know, we sort of blurt out what we're thinking about when it comes to replay, because we all know that the replay in the CFL, while not perfect, could have, you know, could use some work. And, you know, I made a couple suggestions and stuff like that. The day after we tape this show, the CFL announces that they're going to be making major changes, or changes, in-season changes on top of that, to the playoff rules. Sorry, where did I get playoff in my head? To the so the video replay rules. What did the league tell us, Cliff?
Well, essentially, their goal is to eliminate the fishing contests that we've been all complaining about. And as a result of what's probably been going on now for the past few weeks, the league commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, decided that effective, well, last week, I should say, before the game started, which, as an aside, I'm very happy about, because the last time the CFL decided to make a change in season of one of the rules, one of the games had already been played. So it technically, the rules didn't apply for that game. Mm-hmm. Which featured Ottawa, by the way. So, I mean, for all you conspiracy theorists that think that the Red Blacks are getting all sorts of lucky breaks, well, that just sort of throws a little fuel on the fire. But, no, this rule change was made effective last Wednesday before any team in Week 6 played. And essentially what is going on now is each team gets one challenge per game. Yeah,
so
that's it.
So it's down from a maximum of – it could be a maximum of six per mm-hmm. game – three per team. You know, if you get one right, you get the second right, you get a third. This is now down to, no matter what, one each.
One each. And
you
if
still
you,
have to have a timeout available.
Yep. And if you decide to blow it, if you decide to throw the flag in the first quarter, whether you win it or not, doesn't matter. You're done. That's it. No more. So if there's any more quote-unquote egregious calls, well, then you're out of luck, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
so the idea is to ensure that coaches aren't just going to be trying to throw up a Hail Mary, so to speak, as far as getting calls right or getting any sort of call to sort of swing things more in their favor.
Or running certain routes, then they would try to call one.
Mm-hmm. Now the coaches really truly have to think before they throw that that challenge flag. Is this something that is crucial to the game? Is this something that could make or break how things go? So this is going to be a very interesting experiment so far. We've already seen it not go so well during the Toronto game last week. Mark Trestman threw his challenge flag in the first quarter.
Really early.
Yeah, and did not win. So anything else that happened throughout the game, I don't recall there being anything too outlandish penalty-wise or anything like that that would have necessitated a challenge. But at the same time, just the fact that he didn't have that in his back pocket, I'm sure, is going to make him think, and pretty much every coach now, as a result, think a little bit harder before they reach for the flag and just toss it out there.
Well, let me ask you this question. We talked about how they made changes last year, made in-season changes to the rules last year. First, what is your thought on the league doing this? Because, you know, there can be slight modifications, but, you know, the league's going all out, putting out press releases. They had a conference call, which we'll talk about in a couple of seconds here. What's your thought on this? Because the last league, quote-unquote, pro league, and I'm doing this on purpose, pro league, in quotation marks, that did something like this was the XFL, and they made modifications to the rules in season. Mm-hmm. What's your thought on football or any pro leagues making changes to whatever it may be in season, rather than waiting until the end of the regular season and et cetera?
I suppose no matter what, you're not going to win either way, because if you make these changes, especially people that are looking to crap on the league are going to talk about how it's Bush, that you're changing rules and all this stuff while the actual season is going on. Whereas I'm of the opinion that if there's a problem, you fix the you address the problem and you fix it right away.
Right.
Now, again, if you make rule changes every week, that's a different story. That just looks ridiculous. But I think considering what's been going down over the past few weeks, and this is not just against the Alouettes, but against pretty much I think every team now in the CFL in 2017 could make an argument that they got kind of screwed over a little bit by the command center and the referees as far as missing important calls or calls not going their way or anything like that. So I think in a sense, this was done mostly to ensure that the fans understand and appreciate the fact that the league is looking out for their best interests as well, because at the end of the day, you want to put together a entertaining product. And the past couple of weeks, for the most part, have been pretty exciting, but at the same time, a lot of these calls are just absolutely brutal. So the fact that the league has now taken steps to sort of eliminate some of the chicanery, if you will, I think is going to be a tremendous improvement. And I think we're starting to see that already, because I think, and again, I freely admit I didn't see every single game this weekend, this past weekend, but I think the number of challenges must have gone down considerably, because I think now coaches really truly have to think, okay, is this worth challenging? Like, if they're talking with their people up in the booth, they're the ones that yell down, you got to challenge this, you got to challenge this. Like, do you really have to challenge it? Like, now everybody's thinking twice. Now everybody's kind of a little gun shy about throwing the flag. You want to make sure that if you do, that it's truly, truly beneficial on your part to be able to throw that flag. So I think overall it's going to be a good thing. Whether or not this move could have waited until the end of the season, I guess we could debate that forever. But I think for the league, for the Canadian Football League to be able to stay on top of trying to be innovative and trying to present the best product possible for its fans, I think this was a move that had to be made. And I think doing it in, if it means that doing it in midseason, then that's what you got to do. Sometimes you got to adapt. You got to adapt to the situation around you. And if it's all for making things better, then that's, you got to do what you got to do to make things better for everybody in the Canadian Football League.
Right.
And that's what I think that they were aiming for. And I think they've, for the most part, they've accomplished that with this rule change.
No, I can, and that I can get. That I can get. I mean, it's literally the last 2 years it has been because of, you know, slight modifications to the rules for replay. You know, I can understand why the league did this. I'm glad the league looked at this, because if you look at this, you know, they were basically, according to the press release, you know, the commissioner ordered an evaluation of the process after his latest visits to the CFL stadium this past week, not this past week, but the weekend before. The resulting proposal to restrict coaches' challenges to won a game was approved last evening in a series of calls with the league's competition committee, team presidents, and lead governors. It went that quick. That shows promise. That shows that they want to keep the integrity the integrity within the game itself. I love that. Now, what about, and I have to bring this up, what about the games prior? Of all the things that were challenged, and you know what, guys, continue to say it's sour grapes, whatever. What about the Owls-Winnipeg game? Would they have had the challenge available for the infamous roughing the passer, you know, by Aki that extended the drive, the winning drive for Winnipeg? Because either way, the last play of the game was going to be reviewed anyways, because it's, and that's still available. That's still available. This is just coaches' challenges. So after every score, they're still going to review them. But that was still would have been into play. How many games would have been changed in the first 6 weeks?
Games,
outcomes would have been changed.
I think it's fair to say that quite a few would have been changed immediately.
I think the Owls one would have been changed, in my opinion. And yes, I know. Tim, you're a homer.
Sure. Of course.
I think that would have been changed easily. I think the Owls would have won that game. The Owls still should have won that game. You know, because as we're seeing, replay is still not perfect. They were talking about in the conference call, Cliff, that the league, you know, for transparency's sake, and this is where I'm going to go with this here, for transparency's sake, that they have been tweeting explanations to the calls. And we came across one, which was the specific call that we were talking about, which is by Chris Edwards. He's a producer for live events over at TSN, at CFL, and a couple of other things. And he talked about it, and he was saying that there was no true definitive look due to the bodies in the way. I guess they're talking about the last call of the game. To me, that, I'm sorry. As much as I love the league and I love the transparency, that's bunk.
I agree.
Because one of the main calls was directly in the view, unless you're talking about the side views. But anyways, talking about transparency, I was lucky enough to have a chance to chime in and ask a question to the commish and to the head of referees. And, well, you know, Cliff, let's play that question. We'll hear what their answers were, and we'll talk about it.
Alrighty.
The next question is from Tim Capper from Alouette Flight Deck. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thanks for everything, guys, and I'm very glad that you guys were able to make this change. Question for both of you, really. It seems that the CFL is actually looking to reduce the footprint of the video review to, I guess, as minimal as possible. Why not make review as transparent as possible? My question is, would the CFL be open to adopting an open mic system similar to the Arena Football League, where fans can see and hear the command center goes through the review process in real time and thus gaining insight into the final decision?
Yeah, I'll let Glenn respond as well. You know, I think at the end of the day, the idea of transparency is a good thing in almost everything we do in life. You know, the more people see into the way we think and do things, I think is a healthy and positive thing. You know, one of the ways we've been trying to be transparent is that we have been, very shortly after our command center decisions, we have been tweeting out, you know, the rationale for the decision that was made. And that was an attempt to you know, really clarify what the command center saw when they did the replay. And I think I can say this for all of us, and then I'll let Glenn weigh in. We want to do everything we can to create the greatest fan experience possible. And I think we're open to all good ideas. You can't do everything that you might want to, but I think that what we're trying to bring to this process, and I applaud Glenn for being a leader in this area, is to just have an open mind to all possibilities and look at them, and consider them and be thoughtful in response. And, you know, as I said earlier, we are going to look at do a full and complete review of our challenge flag and replay command center strategy at the end of the year. And I'd suggest that, you know, all things will be on the table, because like Glenn and I, you know, our board of governors and our team presidents and our, you know, general managers and coaches, we want to make this game as great as we possibly can make it for our fans.
Yeah, and Tim, I would just add to what the commissioner said that he's absolutely right. You know, it's about innovation.
Mm-hmm.
We are leaders in this space. You know, we're doing things no other leagues are doing. And, you know, when you do that, sometimes it doesn't transfer always, you know, onto the field or to the execution model, you know, as it does from the drawing board. But yeah, we're absolutely looking to try and be more transparent. We're working with the Hamilton Tiger Cats right now with a ref cam in stadium to pilot that, continuing to work with TSN on, you know, live miking initiatives and other things. So, absolutely, all those things will be on the table as we review the whole process.
Thanks for your time, guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, again, I was glad to be able to get the opportunity to ask the question. What did you think about the answers from the commissioner and from CFL's head of officiating? I mean, again, I think transparency is really necessary when it comes to this type of thing. Because as I said in my question, Cliff, is that if you can see why they made the choice and be able to see all the camera angles that are available to them, you know, I don't think that's not a bad thing. It's another way to improve the game, whether you have one replay or whether you have, you know, one coach, because you'd still be able to do it, you know, on all. I don't know if they would do it for scoring replays. But that's the question I even thought about. But what did you think about what they said when it came to my idea for transparency?
Well, I think just because of the fact that it's at that time, it was still so brand new, the idea of just reducing the challenges down to one per team, one per game. I think they were trying to maybe sort of play it safe. Like, I think it's something that now that you sort of brought that to their attention, I don't know if they were considering it initially or whatnot. As far as I'm concerned, it's a great idea. And I think transparency can only be a good thing. I mean, it's one of those things that will sort of back up the fact that, you know, this league takes things very seriously. They take scoring plays, they take challenges, all that stuff. Like, the whole video review process, quite frankly, has to be taken seriously. So I think if they were being transparent about it, it would also eliminate the whole, well, you know, you're favoring the home team, or you're favoring this guy, you're favoring that thing, or what have you. It takes all that out of the equation. I think what that does, by being transparent, by sort of opening things up, like sort of pulling back the curtain, if you will.
I love that. And that's why I suggested it, too, because I find it has worked out really well in my history of following the Arena Football League and how it is done. And I think I've said it many a time when we've brought up this type of thing before. It is the best in sports. It is the best type of replay in sports, bar none, because you get to see everything along with them. You know, it's like, because I don't know, you Have you ever been to the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I have not, no.
Okay. At the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they have, at least they did when I went there, I think it was 3 years ago. They had this section where you can basically be the call to the booth, and you get to choose. You get to see the replay, and you get to make the call. It's a huge, totally different perspective. So I think it's something that I hope that the league will look at seriously, try to implement something like that, because it won't create any more time to you know, taking it away from the game, because it's all the replay is already in motion. You're just watching the process. We're being big brother.
Yeah. No, and like I said, I think it comes back down to what we've been talking about, is that you've got to open things up. You've got to sort of let the fans at least try to get an understanding. Like, at the end of the day, if fans aren't happy with the call because it goes against their team, I mean, there's not really a whole lot you can do about that. Like, no one's going to be happy in that sense. But to be able to go back and say, listen, this was the call that was made. You can clearly see that this is a violation of this rule, that rule, whatever. Very similar to what the NHL has been doing as of late, as far as trying to explain a lot of their calls, that a lot of their video reviews and a lot of the things that when they make their decisions, they usually have an explanation for it. So I think something like that would definitely help people understand the game a little bit better, help them sort of understand where the thought process is as far as what the league is doing, as far as these calls are being done. And
right.
Again, you're not going to make everybody 100% happy, but at least if you can go back and say, you know what, listen, you may not be happy with the call, but it's pretty clear that player X did this thing, which is against this rule. And at the end of the day, it comes back to accountability. It comes back to making clear why these things are against the rules, and why it may even come down to why your team lost was because your player didn't do the job properly, as opposed to something ambiguous and something that can be left wide open to interpretation, and where you can only just sit and wonder what if. Like, for example, the last Alouettes game, like we truly felt that Andrew Harris had a knee down or an elbow down before scoring his touchdown.
Yeah.
Now, if the league had been able to show us more reviews to really truly come to that conclusion that no, despite what you may have seen, he truly did stay on his feet enough for him to score the touchdown. And you know what? We wouldn't have been happy as Alouettes fans, but okay. Yeah, at least you sort of explained it, you showed it, and then you're able to sort of
show
I guess,
us the angles.
It.
Yeah, show us the angles and show it why if it was inconclusive. You need the referees to say a little bit more than the play stands as is. Say why. You know, we sometimes do see when they're call the penalty, which in the NHL it's really weird seeing them call the penalties like they do in the NHL. Actually tell us what and why, because sometimes as fans it's a little bit hard to just take something at face value. You do sometimes want to know why. So it's,
I think if nothing else, you don't want to insult the fans' intelligence, because at the end of the day, we're sitting, especially if you're sitting at home in front of your big screen TV and you've got a pretty good view of everything, at least from what TSN is showing you essentially. Mm-hmm. And if it looks to you like the play should have been changed or something like that, then of course, whether it benefits your team or not, I think is irrelevant. But at the same time, if you can look at it and say, oh no, that shouldn't have been a touchdown, or that was pass interference, or any number of things. And ideally, if you're looking at it from that perspective and it looks that way, but then the league all of a sudden comes across from the command center and says, no, actually it wasn't like that, and just leave it at that, you're going to have that bad taste in your mouth. You're going to have that feeling like, I don't think they're paying attention. I don't think they really got the call right. And it comes back down to the whole, is this a Bush League move? And I'm sorry, but I mean, like, people are going to – perception is reality as far as I'm concerned. And I think a lot of people would just sort of look at it as like, well, clearly to me, that was a very bad call, and as a result, I think this league is Bush League. And again, that's opinion, not fact.
Right,
but at the same time, why don't you back up the facts behind it? Like, if you truly do not believe that this was an egregious call, if you truly do not believe
that – I hate that word. I'm really beginning to hate that word, by the way.
I know. But again, this is the table that's been set before us, unfortunately. But at the end of the day, it really does come down to leagues. The league should take the onus. The onus should be on the league, as far as I'm concerned, to present the best possible product as far as how the replay goes, and making it clear to the fans watching at home and in the stands too. Also, explains them why this call is what it is, and people are going to accept it, win, lose, or draw. I get that, but if you provide the explanation, you provide as much evidence as possible to back up what you're stating, whether the call is for or against your team, at the end of the day, it comes down to making the game better and helping people understand a lot better too. Not just sort of taking a stance and making that the hill you're going to die on, because more often than not, it's not a good look for anyone. When you're coming at things from that perspective, it just doesn't look good for the fans. It doesn't look good for the players. It doesn't look good for the league itself. It's one of those things that I'm hoping, as now that things have sort of been settled down a little bit, now that we've pretty much decided that, okay, we're just doing one challenge per team per game. Okay, fine. Let's see how that works out. And I'm sure at the end of the season, Commissioner Ambrosi is going to take a look at how this went down with his officiating crew and everything, and try to see where else can we improve upon this. Where can we do things to make things a little bit better? And if that also means we got to open up the command center to everybody and let them explain how they came to the conclusions that they did, then so be it. It can only be good as far as I'm concerned.
Makes you wonder, with the changes that they're making now, if they're going to make some more modification, because will they take away some of the things that you can challenge and then open it back up again? You know, have the challenges more or less what they have in the NFL, and open it back up to having, say, you know, put some more, you know, when you make a challenge, there has to be some ramifications. You know, originally it was, you know, you could have one for free and you didn't lose a timeout, and now it's you lose a timeout. You should lose a timeout always, because remember, you only have two timeouts per half in the CFL. Mm-hmm. So, one.
One per half.
One per half, sorry. So it makes a big difference. Make it only one challenge per half, maybe. Maybe something, I don't know. It's something that maybe the league will look at, because if reffing does not get any better and the challenges are keep getting blown by the command center, then something else I have to maybe complete overhaul. And I don't know. You know, the league, the CFL was a league leader, not a league leader, but they were the ones to debut a lot of these calls that a lot of these other leagues would not make and not try. Growing pains, I get it.
Absolutely.
So, what do you guys think? Are we right? Are we wrong? Are we homers? Let us know. You know that.
Of course. Yeah. Well, of course we're homers. Like I said, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people would say, like, well, if Montreal won that game against Winnipeg, you'd be, you know, trying to, you know, dissuade people from this opinion. And no, it's...
No, because, I mean, I'm talking overall, because I think, you know, there are I've seen some calls in the other games, too, that weren't my team, and I was like, that was utterly atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you wonder. Then it makes you wonder, so...
Yeah. And again, I think also too, you sort of touched on this a little bit, is the officiating. I mean, there's got to be a way to increase it. I get it. It's essentially a part-time job. I mean, these guys are doing it not for glory or anything like that. But I think there's got to be some sort of way. And I know that the CFL had partnered with the NFL to try and, I guess, sort of help improve both leagues and their officiating as a result. I'm sure there's got to be more ways that they can sort of put more money into the actual officiating, into the training and everything like that, and just making the officials just that much better, because essentially that's what the challenges were coming down to, was the coaches not having any faith that the referees were doing their job properly. So that's why they had to institute this, in order to be sure that whatever the calls were being made were the correct ones. Now you've sort of taken that power away from the coaches, or at least reduced it greatly. So now, if you're going to do that, that's all well and good, because that does eliminate a lot of the nonsense and the sideshow that was going on. But that also means the referees have to step up as well. And they can't just be throwing flags willy-nilly either. They've got to be able to back up what they're saying and be able to truly say 100% whether someone was being erroneous on the field or not. And that's going to be key as well. I mean, and this is something, like I said, it's going to be kind of hard to institute it in the middle of the season. But like I said, I'm hoping that the commissioner does take a good long look at the officiating after the season, and some serious changes will definitely have to be made as far as trying to improve things overall. Because at the end of the day, this is what it comes down to, is making the game better overall, making it a better product on TV, making it a better product for the fans that are going to the stadium live to watch the game. You want this to be the best possible product, and that has to include the referees as well. I mean, if you've got these incredible players, great coaches, and everything that's going along with it, but you got officials that are still having a hard time with pass interference, legal contact, what's roughing the passer, all these other sort of calls that are just getting blown, essentially.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have a chance to make things better, then this is something that the commissioner is definitely going to have to take a good long look at. And it's not a process that's going to be fixed overnight, because the problem didn't happen overnight either. It's going to take some time to fix these things. But I really hope that this was a step one in a positive direction. I don't expect to see any more changes being made to the rules mid-season like this. I really think that they're going to sort of ride this out and see how it goes from this point going forward and see how things are at the end of the season. And then at that point, you have to really sit down with the competition committee, with your referees, and really truly see, was this the best call to make and how else can we improve things so that the game itself gets better as time goes on.
Yeah. Thanks to the CFL for allowing me to take part in the conference call and allowing me to ask my question because, we may be just a podcast, but we are fans. And if you can ask questions the proper way, you can get an answer and maybe a little bit get some insight into what the executives are thinking in the CFL. Speaking of results, what is it saying? An action always equals a reaction, or what's that damn saying that you're supposed to learn as kids?
Newton's theory. I think it's Einstein's theory of relativity that every action has an equal and opposite reaction.
There you go. That's what it was. Thank you, Einstein.
There you go.
Because of that hit, the roughing the passer hit on Matt Nichols, when the league put out their listing of players that got fined for the week, I didn't blow as big a gasket as I did because of the Owls' loss and how they lost it, but I lost it again, just not publicly on Twitter and stuff like that. Oh, actually, I did put it to something on Twitter. Well, so much for that lie. Chris Ackey got fined for that hit that would not have been a penalty if there wasn't replay. Maybe he would have. As we know, that led to the first down and then led to the Bombers winning drive. What's your thought on that? I mean, that's salt in the wound easily. It's basically saying, oh, well, this happened. Well, guess what? Now you're getting fined for it. Now, my question to you is, Cliff, would he have been fined? We've seen this before where it wasn't called and there was a fine. Mm-hmm. Would he have been fined for this thing if they had not challenged it and called it RTP?
Mm. It's hard to say, really, because I definitely agree that finding Ackey on top of that, I mean, he was already punished in the game, and now you're going to throw a monetary fine on him.
That's great. That's a good slip, the monetary challenge. I like that.
I can only speculate as to how much money Chris Ackey makes, so I don't know whether this fine is a challenge for him or not, but I just think it's just extremely petty. I get it. I mean, on first blush, yeah, it's a helmet to helmet hit, but at the end of the day, if Matt Nichols was able to take a hit properly, we have seen worse. And again, I just think it was literally insult to injury, because unfortunately Chris Ackey during the bye week also underwent surgery for his for a torn tricep, and now he's out for the rest of the season. So bad enough that dude gets a rough in the passer call against him, gets fined on top of that, and now he can't even go and earn his keep anymore.
Yeah.
Like that sucks. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's ridiculous. And I'm sorry, at the end of the day, could Ackey have tackled him a little bit better? Could he have tried to avoid the helmet to helmet? That's 50-50 at best as far as I'm concerned. I mean, we can sit in – hindsight's always 20-20. We can always sort of take a look at things and feel, well, you should have done this, should have done that. But you know what? At the end of the day, it still came down to Matt Nichols tucking his head in, bracing for the impact, because he knew it was coming. Like, he was all alone. His O-line was nowhere to be found. And like I said, Ackey had him dead to rights. And you knew a sack was coming. But what we didn't see coming, unfortunately, was the tucking of the head and bracing for the impact, which unfortunately does mean helmet-to-helmet contact. Referee throws the flag 15 yards instantly, and the rest, as they say, is history. So it's really unfortunate. I think that was kind of piling on a little bit for Ackey, but that's the CFL for you. I think they just sort of like to, you know, do little things like that. And I guess it's trying to send a message to the rest of the league that, you know, you cannot hit quarterbacks. You cannot do this. You cannot do that. And fine, whatever. I thought it was silly, but it is what it is, unfortunately. And I guess the only thing we do is hope and pray that now you don't have to worry about Chris Ackey hurting anyone anymore this season, because, dude's in a sling now. He just had surgery, and unfortunately he's out for the rest of the season, which is a tough blow because, I mean, the guy worked his ass off to get to where he is now. He was doing a great job. He had replaced Marc-Olivier Brouillette as the starting safety in a national spot, no less. But that, like I said, that sometimes these things happen in football. And now it is going to give an opportunity, though, to another youngster that I've been pretty high on, one Dondre Wright. He is now essentially going to be taking over the free safety position for the Alouettes. And kid's been playing absolutely fantastic football lately. So I'd like to see how it's – now he's going to have to really step up his game because now he's in the starter role. Like, he can't hide behind anybody anymore. He's not hiding behind Aki or anything. Now everything he does is going to be out in the forefront. And I'm very excited to see what happens because, like I said, I think very highly of this young man. I think he's got a great motor. He plays every play with the same energy. He doesn't take any plays off. It's fantastic. And you could just tell he is just waiting for that right opportunity to get that first official INT, because he did have one during the preseason game. But if Dondre can get a – just read the quarterback and get a pick off him, it's going to be phenomenal. I can just tell that. It's going to be an absolutely outstanding event when that finally does happen for him. And now with that extra playing time, it could happen sooner than later.
Yeah. Yeah, it's football. I don't – it's – you pull off a good play and then you get hurt and it's, but you know, the CFL, as we've seen, it is a league of opportunity. And, sometimes you got to juggle, you know, and I just can't trying to be these head coaches and the GM stuff like that, being up, trying to juggle the ratios must be a huge pain in the ass sometimes, but, you know,
and again, this is next man up, and this is where we get to see, one, just how good his coaching has been, and also, two, like the fact that Kavis Reed, as you said, as a general manager, it's not easy to be able to balance the ratio properly. Very thankful that the safety position has been a Canadian position for a long time. Like I said, Marc-Olivier Brouillette occupied the middle for the Alouettes for a long time. His backup, Daryl Townsend, when he's not on special teams, he also plays a little bit of safety as well, also Canadian. Aki, also a national player. And like I said, Dondre Wright is a national player. So, I mean, this is a position that is strictly Canadian. So at the end of the day, you want to be able to replace if your best player goes down, you want to be able that his understudy can step in at a moment's notice and not miss a beat. And I feel extremely confident that Dondre Wright is going to be able to step into that role of safety for the Alouettes. And I think he'll do absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I know we're going to talk about the game in a couple of minutes, and, so it's CFL is an opportunist league. It's basically what it is. And, you just gotta make the team that has to make the best choice of who they think is going to be able to do the best for the team. Looking for something different from your snacks? Grab a bag of Bad Monkey Popcorn. Bad Monkey Popcorn is produced locally in Montreal in a number of mouthwatering flavors that will have your taste buds wanting more after just one kernel. Now available throughout Quebec in most major grocery stores, independent outlets, and selected cities across Canada. For more information, head to badmonkeypopcorn.com.
Hey folks, we appreciate your continued support of the Alouettes Flight Deck podcast. You can find all of our previous episodes over on Podbean. Just head to alouettesflightdeck.podbean.com. You can also find us on iTunes and Google Play Music by searching the keywords Alouettes Flight Deck. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at @AlouettesFLDeck and check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/AlouettesFlightDeck. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns about the show, you can shoot us an email, AlouettesPodcast@gmail.com. Once again, thanks so much for listening.
So before we start talking about the game, I just have to at least mention, so the CFL came out with one of their, eight things for eight teams, but whatever it's called, on their webpage. And for the Owls this week, they happen to talk about which receiver would you rather have in his prime, Cliff. And the two choices are Nick Lewis and Ben Cahoon. So they go, well, Ben Cahoon and Nick Lewis have put up similar numbers throughout their career. Style of play is where the two perennial All-Stars pass catchers differ. On Friday, Lewis needs 6 catches to tie Cahoon for second on the all-time receptions list as the Owls receiver continues to march towards G. Roy Simon at number one. Cahoon and Lewis are and were unique in their craft and have left a profound impact on the Canadian Football League. They're also both two of the greatest receivers that have ever played. But which one in his prime would you prefer on your team?
Wow.
And even now, even though you and I were talking about this pre-show, we still can't come up with an answer for this one.
It's tough.
Because, slight differences that one Canadian, one's not. One was a national, one was
yeah.
You know, fan base loved him wherever he went. So, you know, Calgary here. Cahoon, he was here the entire time.
Yeah.
Cahoon, well known for going over the middle. Nick Lewis, known for bowling over players over the middle.
Yep, that's true. Both are incredible slots that I will say revolutionized the position mm-hmm. in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
Both have been clutch in key moments for their teams. And I guess when I say it for Lewis, I mean both for Calgary and for Montreal, because
yeah.
Ben only ever played for Montreal, yeah. but he was always clutch for them. So, I
don't know who I would choose, because to be fair, you know, sometimes I can be just a homer, and I won't pay as much attention to the other teams as I should. You know, you hear about the leaders in the league, etc. But you know, you keep your eye on your wide receivers. Mm-hmm. who are on your team.
Yeah.
But I know everybody knows about Nick Lewis. Everybody knows about Ben Cahoon. This is a tough question. I've not made my choice yet. And if you have been over to the CFL website, go ahead and do it and go under weekly say question every team for week 8. We got to pick. I got to pick somebody, man.
Oh.
I don't know. That's tough.
It really is. And both absolutely adored by fans, too. So,
yeah.
I mean, that's
yeah.
Like, no matter what, like you're not going to go wrong, because Ben's already in the Hall of Fame. Nick Lewis, when he does retire, will go in the Hall of Fame. There's no question about that as well. So you're talking essentially about two Hall of Fame caliber players. Both have won championships. Both have captured the hearts and imaginations of the fans wherever they went. It's, man, that is a tough, tough question.
I'm looking at it. I mean, Ben finished off his career with nine out of 10 years with over 1,000 yards. Nick Lewis is up there too. You know, I think Nick actually started off quicker than Ben did. But I mean, the 1 years where Ben scored multitude of touchdowns. I mean, in 2003 alone, he had 13 receiving touchdowns, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. We often forget that Ben Cahoon was playing in Montreal before Anthony Calvillo became Anthony Calvillo.
Yeah.
So once those two finally started playing together and started to connect, that's really, really, really where you got to see where Ben took off. I mean, you saw little bits of it to start his career. Like the first couple of years of his career were pretty respectable. I mean, not outstanding, not amazing, but it wasn't until he was paired up with Calvillo that things really started to click. And for Nick Lewis, I mean, he's played with some pretty outstanding quarterbacks throughout his years as well. So, I mean, like to be able to develop that connection right away. And that was always key, especially this year with Darren Durant coming in. That was a big key, was how was Durant and Lewis going to be able to were they going to be able to find that chemistry and make things happen for the Alouettes? And
yeah.
It's starting to happen now. Like that's one thing I can say, like it's taken a little time for Durant to really get comfortable with his receivers. But now he's starting to see the value in a lot of these guys, especially on Nick Lewis, because Nick Lewis, I mean, like he's still playing at an incredible level right now. I mean, he's like you said, he bowls people over. I mean, he's still so athletic. I mean,
Ben was known for getting off of his feet. We've seen some of his crazy ass one-handed catches in the playoffs and so on. You know, Nick Lewis started off his career with 9 straight 1,000 yard seasons, 9 straight. And he did not get his next one until 2016 with Montreal. Cahoon himself, he only had 9 for his career. So stats alone, yeah, Nick Lewis, you know, Cahoon has played in 8 more postseason games.
Mm-hmm.
So you know what? I'm going to just choose one. I say flip a coin, but I don't have a coin on me.
But get the spinner out.
Yeah, get the spinner out. I'm just going to go, you know what? We're going to see what they are. I'm going to go homer on this one. I'm going to choose, but that's a tough one. I'll choose Ben Cahoon. I got a sneaking suspicion, though. I have a feeling that Nick Lewis is going to be ahead in this poll. So I'm going to choose Cahoon. Wow. Not what I expected. Ben Cahoon, 55%. Nick Lewis, 45% as of this taping on Tuesday.
I expected it to be close because, like I said, like listen, just now, we just struggled to pick somebody. And I still haven't made my pick yet either. I mean, if you were to put a gun to my head and force me to choose one of the two, I think I'd probably go Cahoon as well. And it's just but the thinnest of margins, because I mean, I absolutely love the way that Nick Lewis plays football, and it's taking nothing away from him, because he has been absolutely outstanding, not just in Montreal, but also his entire career in Calgary has been absolutely phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I mean, the guy is a winner through and through.
Yeah.
And that's just translated back over here to Montreal as well. Even if the team hasn't been great, Nick has still been able to perform at an incredible level, and still is to this day. Like I said, his spot in the Hall of Fame is there. It's just a matter of first he's got to retire, and then they got to wait out that 3-year process. Mm-hmm. But he's going into the Hall of Fame. Ben's already there. Like, he's already done that. So, I mean, it's such a tough comparison. But, I guess it really comes down to the way they played, and if you were a fan of that particular style. Like I said, like, Ben just made plays happen. Like, he was Johnny on the spot, like the ultimate receiver, just for that short yardage situation. He was absolutely phenomenal. And dude would take a hit and get back up like it was nothing. I always marveled at how well he was able just to take a licking and keep on ticking, as they say. But Nick Lewis, I mean, like, just the way he plays, like you said, he bowls people over, and you just can't believe how athletic this guy is. And it's remarkable just how well he understands. Like, he's a student of the game, and he's so committed to making himself better as a result as well.
Yeah.
Whereas Ben, he didn't have to worry so much about trying to improve his game, because it came to him so naturally too. You're talking about two guys, like, you're talking apples and oranges here, and you're not going to lose by choosing one over the other, but man, it's tough. It's so tough, because no matter what, you're still getting a quality receiver, no matter who you choose.
Yep. Yep.
You're going to get a winner no matter who you choose. Yeah. But to have to pick one over the other, like,
that's a tough choice. That's a tough choice.
That was hard. And even then, like, I could still see myself sort of retracting, like, I know
they're good and they're bad things.
Like, you'd be going back and forth on a long time, and then once you make that choice, even if you feel convinced, you're like, oh, maybe I should have gone the other way.
Yeah, I know. You can only have one slot back. So
damn you, CFL. That was tough.
Whew. Yeah. Got the game this week. No game ball because, well, the game ball could have been to having a bye week. Congratulations.
Hey, and listen, you know what? I say we give the Alouettes the game ball because they had a great bye week. You think about it. They went undefeated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Toronto lost. Hamilton lost. Ottawa lost. Everybody in the West lost in week six except the Alouettes.
Yeah.
So guess what? Montreal Alouettes, for having an undefeated, absolutely outstanding bye week, you get the Alouettes flight deck game ball.
That's right. You get no screws to you. You didn't get any screws. So I think the big question is, and, you know, the Owls are going into starting up the second third of the season at 2-4, which they have done, unfortunately, the last 3 out of 5 years. Four out of five years. Either way. Big question, though, for the Owls this week is who is going to be starting at quarterback? The Argos. And you heard, and if you've been watching the news with the CFL, the shenanigans are happening again, weren't they? Especially in the Big Smoke, right?
Well, and if you folks haven't been paying attention, Ricky Ray got injured in his game last week towards the end. And the initial report was that he'd be out for 4 to 6 weeks, which would mean that he would ultimately miss this home-and-home series that's going on, the Alouettes and Argos will be having over the next couple of weeks. Now, all of a sudden, Sunday comes along and Ricky Ray's leading the walkthrough at practice. Now, walkthrough isn't full-on practice. It's not a full contact or anything like that. Like, the guys aren't wearing pads. There's no touches, anything like that. Like, it's literally just a walkthrough. So, okay, that's a little strange, but all right, you never know. And now all of a sudden, he's taking part in practice. So, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? Well, if you were to ask Argos head coach Mark Trestman, he won't give you the answer, which is definitely not a Trestman-like quality, because he prides himself on being straightforward and outgoing. So now one has to wonder what's going on. And to further thicken the plot, today, Tuesday, the Argos closed off practice to everybody.
How dare they? Are they taking a page out of the Calgary and the
and the Riders and
the Saskatchewans and
Hamilton? And,
yeah, taking a page out of their playoff out of their playbook.
So now we have no idea how Ricky Ray did if he was leading the practice today. We have no idea how he did. So, or if he even did practice, because again, closed practice means nobody knows what's going on but the players and the coaches.
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Really makes you wonder. Because you were saying before that I think it was Dave Naylor made the call talking about 4 to 6 weeks, and he's usually pretty dead on when it comes to reporting these things. And then all of a sudden, as I said, he's not showing up. Ricky, if anything, Ricky will not be put. If it's anything that Ricky would be put on the one game list, or he'll be a healthy scratch. But it's just a matter of, you know, because, you know, when it comes to the ratio, it doesn't matter with the quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. He'll either, they won't do a thing. Because with the game being on Friday, they will not announce a thing. It'll be a game time decision. And I bet you, if anything, if that's not said at all tomorrow or whatever by Coach Trestman, I don't see Ricky starting. How? You can't go from 4 to 6 weeks. I think, wasn't it a clavicle? Something?
It was his AC joint, I believe it's called.
Okay, yeah.
In his shoulder.
But come on.
I mean, that's the thing.
I mean, I understand it's football. These mind games can be fun. But I know it can be frustrating because the Owls have nothing to go with, you know, because it is a home and home series. You know, it will be interesting. It will be very interesting.
And again, like you don't necessarily, like I said, you don't necessarily think of Mark Trestman as one to play mind games or anything like that. And that's really what it's coming across as is he just trying to mess with the Alouette's head? Like, because do you prepare for Ricky Ray or do you prepare for Cody Fajardo or whatever the hell his name is?
Fajita.
There you go.
Fajita.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like 6,000 chicken fajitas, please.
I beg your pardon.
6,000 chicken fajitas.
Cody. I got his name wrong. Whoever the backup quarterback is, it's not Drew Willie because he's on our practice roster. Let's put it
that way.
That's
right. You're right.
So, will Ricky Ray be playing this game on Friday or will he not be? That's going to be the question right now. And now the Alouettes have to decide, do we game plan for Ricky Ray or do we game plan for not Ricky Ray? So
They'll be practicing for Ricky. It's just, you know,
And you have to believe too, like this is a Ricky Ray playbook. You got to make sure that whoever you slot in for Ricky Ray is going to be able to understand it, grasp it, and maybe put his own little spin on things. But by and large, he should be able to handle the plays that Ricky normally does. So let's hope that this young fella is able to do that for the Argos' sake anyways, because one thing's for sure, no matter who the quarterback is, Montreal's defense doesn't care. They're going to want to – they've got a chip on their shoulder after that after blowing things essentially in Winnipeg.
They've had more than enough time to think about this.
It's been marinating now for almost 2 weeks, that stinging loss to the Blue Bombers. And like I said, it last week and I'll say it again, that loss was not on the referees. It wasn't on the command center. It really came down to the Alouettes defense not being able to close in the last minute and 40 seconds. That's on them. And I think they know that too. And I think that they're going to come out hot as a pistol and ready to hurt somebody as a result. And if I'm the Argos, do I really want to be putting Ricky Ray at less than 100% out there against this extremely pissed off defense? I personally wouldn't. I think I'd be better. You know what, Rick, just grab a seat. If we get really screwed, we'll call you. But I don't think I'd want to put my premier quarterback in the line of fire like that, as far as I'm concerned, at least not right away, especially after so soon after suffering an injury like this. And I don't care. Like a separated shoulder doesn't seem like a whole lot compared to like a broken arm or torn ACL or anything like that. But I mean, like this is something that it's a weakness. And the last thing you want to do is show any sort of weakness to your opponent. And especially a defense like Montreal's they're going to take advantage of that. And if Ricky Ray is playing, they are gunning for him.
Yeah, they should. They should. I mean, Toronto, you know, it makes you wonder because Toronto's been putting up a hell of a lot of yards. They really have. What will they do with Ricky not under center? You know,
well, and this is where we're going to see just how great of a player SJ Green is, because he's going to be expected to lead that offense no matter who's behind center for the Argos. I don't care who you are. Like they could put you in the lineup and just say, throw it to SJ. And SJ will tell you, just throw it to me, man. I will make the play happen. And that's what he does. And he's done it so well over the years. And he's been doing it absolutely fantastic for the Argos this season. So I definitely see Montreal is going to have to game plan more, I think, for SJ Green as opposed to whoever the quarterback is for the Argos. But, I mean, if it's Ricky Ray, he knows what he has in SJ Green as far as the target goes, and he'll make good use of that. And I don't know if you saw the article on CFL.ca about SJ Green's journey and how he's going to be – he's basically said he's coming back to Montreal with a chip on his shoulder. Like he's I think he's got something to prove. Just like Darian Durant had something to prove against the Riders in week one, I think for SJ Green, he's had this game circled on his calendar for a long time, and he's going to be ready. I can guarantee you that.
It makes you wonder, with the way that they let him go, really, was there bad blood? We heard what he said before, after he was traded, and they said they talked to him, and really makes you wonder, doesn't it? Really makes you wonder. I mean, I'm still going to applaud the guy. I wore his jersey, I had his number on my favorite players' jerseys and stuff like that, and I will applaud the guy. The guy can make some amazing, crazy catches. Just keep him in check. Just keep him in check. Just like we did versus with Daron Carter in week one. Keep him in check. You know?
Well, that's it. And for Jonathan Mincy, who is, like I said, back from injury. He's been back for a while now, and he's, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best in the game as far as being able to shut down receivers. Like I said, did an absolutely fantastic job against Daron in week one. He's taking a little bit of time to come back to form from his injury, but you got to believe that his number one assignment this Friday will be to shut down SJ Green. And easier said than done, but I think Mincy will be up for the challenge.
Yeah, I think so too. It's funny, and because of all the variables, usually you would have, even at this time of the week, you would have the variable, the lines up over on Five Dimes for the game. There's no lineup. There is still no lineup yet for this game, and there's others for the year. So it makes you wonder if they're holding off just based on the shenanigans that are happening. Overall, the Alouettes are 123-93-6 versus the Argos. They have won the last 6 of 10 versus the Argos. So it will be interesting to see how this game goes. And the game notes haven't come out yet for the CFL. I don't know what Darian Durant's all-time record is versus the Argos, but it'll be interesting to see. It'll be a good game. It'll be a good game. Weather will be nice. I don't think it's supposed to rain. Maybe it's supposed to rain a little bit, I think. That's right now, but things can change.
Well, and the big key here is going to be also to just how the Alouettes will be coming in off their bye week. Mm-hmm, I mean, they're like I said, they've got to be pissed off about what happened nearly 2 weeks ago. And I can definitely see a lot of that sort of bubbling over into this game. And it'd be easy to say, you got to come out hot. You got to come out guns blazing. But I just hope that they can manage to keep a level head. Just stick to their plan. It's going to be hard because you still don't know which quarterback you're going against. You almost have to sort of put that out of your mind, though, in a sense, is that I don't care who – you put Tom Brady in there for the Argos. And you still got to come out – you still got to have – stick to your plan. You got to work your plan. And you just got to take them out. You've got to find a way to shut down SJ Green. You got to get this defense rolling in a big way. And they've got to come back and come back hard, because I know a lot of fans were very upset at the end of that game against the Bombers. And still, as I had predicted, more questions are still swirling. People are still not wanting to buy into this team 100% because they don't feel that they can close.
Well, that's
with good reason.
That's where I feel when I see some of the quote-unquote power rankings that have Montreal 8th, and I'm thinking, you guys are on a complete crack. Complete crack. Considering that how bad Ottawa is. Yes, yeah, sure, Ottawa beat us, but you know what?
Did they, though?
Yeah.
Well, and again, like...
We don't
like,
get points for beating ourselves.
Unfortunately, because we'd definitely be in first place.
Yeah.
But I've said it before, and I'll say it again. You are what your record says you are. And at the end of the day, Montreal's got a better record. They should be a better team. And I think this home-and-home series is definitely going to prove who the better team is, in the East at least. Mm-hmm. Because Montreal, Toronto right now, they're 1-2 respectively. Or Toronto, Montreal, I should say, 1-2 respectively. It's going to be tough. And if Ricky Ray is playing in this game, Ricky Ray always seems to do very well as an Argo. He never did all that great, honestly, as an Eskimo against the Alouettes during the regular season. Grey Cup's a different story, obviously, but during the regular season, as an Eskimo, Ricky Ray was sort of middling at best. Whereas as an Argo, he's played extremely well, whether especially at, in Montreal too, at Percival Molson Stadium. Ricky Ray has always played very, very well. So I have to wonder though if he's less than 100%. If he was 100%, it'd be tough. But now at less than 100, if he plays, that is, that's going to be huge. And you take a look at last year. It was the Argos versus the Alouettes, Jacques Chapdelaine's first game. And Montreal was rolling for that game. And Ricky Ray was not behind center. It was actually Drew Willey. And he had his lunch eaten for him. So if not Ricky Ray is going to be playing, I hope he's ready, because I think Montreal will take full advantage of that. We'll try to get in the rookie's head, try to make him make mistakes. And if they can capitalize that, and that's the key for Montreal, is they got to be able to capitalize on every opportunity that's given to them, whether it's on offense or on defense. They've got to play a full 60 minutes. Stay disciplined, which I know they can do, because last game, not too many penalties, at least not too many for the first 3.5 quarters, I should say, because towards the end, yeah, the penalties were starting to come then. But if they can stay disciplined, stay focused, Darian Durant's going to have to play another lights-out game, regardless of who the Argos quarterback is.
Right, right.
We need that Darian Durant that hung 40 points on the Bombers. He's got to play on Friday. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. Not the one with the turnovers the week prior.
No.
So it should be fun. Yep. If you're planning on going to the game, don't forget it is on Friday. Yeah, if you haven't gotten your tickets yet, make sure you do so. And we'll be back here next week to talk about everything that happened, good or bad. But
good.
but we will be back. We will be back. So enjoy the game, Cliff. I will see you there at the stadium.
Oh yeah, it's my home away from home. Like you said, it's gonna be a beautiful night Friday night, and I'm ready for some live CFL action.
Cool. So for everybody here at Alouette's Flight Deck, for Cliffy D, I'm Tim Capper. We're on Final Approach.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.